Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we are strapping on the night vision goggles and examining a franchise that survived, well, a near-death experience, several identity crises, and somehow went from an ultra-niche military manual to a global stadium-filling esport. I'm talking, of course, about Tom Clancy's Rainbow Six.
It's an incredible story.
It really is. And our mission today is to unpack that radical evolution for you. How exactly did a game where, you know, your main activity was staring at a blueprint, how did that morph into Rainbow Six Siege, this multi-million-dollar powerhouse built around the physics of destruction?
Well, the key, and you have to start here, the key to understanding the entire DNA of Rainbow Six is understanding its founder, Tom Clancy.
Right. He wasn't just a novelist.
Not at all. He was basically a systems designer in disguise. We're talking about a man whose obsession with detail was so profound that his books often read like genuine military operations manuals.
I've heard he could write 30 pages just on a submarine's cooling system.
Exactly. And in the mid-90s, he realized that books, that traditional fiction, lacked one thing he desperately wanted.
Interactivity. Yeah.
So he founded Red Storm Entertainment with one core mandate: create a game that didn't just tell you a story about counterterrorism, but made you execute actual tactics. The novel and the game were basically developed in synergy.
Okay, so let's unpack the core of that 1998 original, because it honestly launched in a state that would be, I think, shocking to modern gamers.
Mm-hmm.
The foundational principle was one shot, one kill.
Always. You were not a super soldier. There was no regenerating health, no heroic jumps, and, crucially, no sprint button.
No sprint button.
None. Okay. If you walked into a room carelessly, you were dead in less than a second. It demanded this, you know, this entirely different level of patience.
And that discipline was really baked into the structure of the game, right? It was divided into those two very distinct phases.
Exactly. First, and often the longest, was the planning phase. You, the player, might spend hours, and I mean hours, staring at a simple two-dimensional blueprint of the objective.
You weren't just plotting a path. You were, what, managing logistics?
Pretty much. You would dictate the precise movement for Alpha Team, Bravo Team, maybe even a Charlie Team, deciding exactly where they stood, where to throw flashbangs, when to breach, everything.
So hours of prep for, what, maybe a minute of action? How did they keep people engaged through that? It sounds incredibly frustrating.
That's a great question, and it speaks to how niche the game was. The payoff was the action foils, the ultimate simulation reward. If your planning was flawless, you could, in theory, complete the mission without ever touching the controls after you hit go.
Just sit back and watch
the AI execute your master plan. It was a pure test of tactical foresight, which was just, you know, unprecedented.
That tactical genius led right into what players now call the golden age of simulation. The sequel, Rogue Spear, in 99, really perfected that experiment. I still remember levels like the airplane hostage rescue.
A classic. But the absolute peak of that hardcore era arrived in 2003 with Rainbow Six 3, Raven Shield. This was a monumental leap forward.
Because of the engine, right?
Yeah, it was the first entry to use the Unreal Engine 2.0. The graphics were a huge jump, but it was the details in the physics that really mattered.
You're talking about the introduction of ragdoll physics. What did that actually mean for the player?
For immersion, it was everything. Hmm. Enemies didn't just trigger some pre-canned generic death animation. They reacted dynamically. They crumpled realistically with this heavy, believable weight.
Right.
It made the gunplay feel incredibly lethal and real.
And the technical rabbit hole just went so deep.
Yeah.
I mean, our sources remind us how hardcore Raven Shield let you be. You could customize your barrel type.
The specific ammo grain you were using.
And even the literal speed at which your character would open a door just to minimize the sound.
It is no wonder that the Raven Shield community still maintains private servers to this day. They really feel the franchise, as one report put it, sold its soul after that game.
That's strong language.
Mm-hmm.
What did Ubisoft sacrifice to chase that mass appeal?
Well, the shift came with the sixth console generation, the PS2, the original Xbox. Ubisoft, who had acquired Red Storm by then, made a strategic decision. They needed volume. They had to make Rainbow Six accessible.
And accessible meant making it work for a controller audience used to much faster action.
Right. And the result, according to just about everyone, was a disaster called Rainbow Six Lockdown in 2005.
Mm.
To appeal to that wider audience, they gutted the core mechanics.
The planning phase was just gone.
Completely removed. Suddenly you, the player, had regenerating health, the tactical tension vanished, and the enemy AI was notoriously let's just say, brain dead.
Fans were furious.
Utterly furious. They felt betrayed. Review scores just plummeted.
So Ubisoft clearly recognized that mistake. They pivoted hard and handed the reins to their Montreal studio to find some kind of middle ground.
Which led to the Vegas series. They had to find a way to keep a tactical identity but also make it fast and fluid. It couldn't just be Call of Duty.
And the Vegas series brought a major innovation that actually changed tactical shooters across the industry. The third-person cover system.
Yes, it pioneered that hybrid system we see all the time now. You're still playing in first person, but the moment you hug a wall, the camera pulls back. It let you assess the situation without exposing yourself.
It felt more cinematic, too. You're rappelling down neon-lit casinos in Sin City, not just dusty compounds.
It was style with streamlined substance. And while it wasn't as complex as the originals, Vegas succeeded because it found a new, distinct identity. The squad command system, tag and clear, made breaching a room quick and intuitive.
And crucially, the online multiplayer laid the groundwork for what was to come.
Exactly. Ubisoft saw the future wasn't just in single-player simulation, but in competitive coordination.
But before we get to Siege, there was this dramatic, maybe even tragic turning point. Rainbow Six. Patriots.
Yeah, Patriots, yeah.
Unveiled in 2011, and the premise was deeply controversial right from the start.
Incredibly risky. The story was about a domestic terror group called the True Patriots. They were rising up against Wall Street corruption, economic inequality. The enemy wasn't some foreign threat. The enemy was literally your neighbor.
And the core ambition, which I think ultimately doomed it, was integrating these heavy, consequential, ethical decisions right into the gameplay.
They were aiming for something really profound. Just look at that infamous demo scenario our sources detail. It was designed to be shocking.
This is the Brooklyn Bridge scenario.
The Brooklyn Bridge. Terrorists strap a suicide vest to an innocent banker. You, as the police, realize the bomb can't be defused. So to save the surrounding civilians, you were forced to physically throw the man off the bridge.
It's so dark. So visceral and political for a mainstream game.
It was. And that incredible ambition, well, the project fell into what developers called development hell.
So what happened? Was it just the controversial story?
It was a perfect storm, really. The engine they were using was aging, the console generation was shifting to the PS4 and Xbox One, and yes, the political narrative became far too sensitive for them to handle in a commercially safe way. The entire project was painfully scrapped in 2013.
It's gone. They had to start over completely.
From scratch.
So the team sits down after this collapse, and they ask themselves, what is the single non-negotiable core of this franchise?
And they realized the essence wasn't the stealth or even a story. It was the environment. The answer they landed on was one simple word: destruction.
And that was the birth of Rainbow Six Siege. They made one of the riskiest decisions in modern gaming. They cut the entire single-player campaign.
Commercial suicide at the time. They bet everything on building a brand new physics engine called Real Blast.
And Real Blast is what makes Siege, well, Siege. The destruction isn't just for show. It's tactical. You can blow a hole in a wall for a new line of sight.
But the defenders can reinforce that wall or set a trap behind a door you thought was safe. The map itself becomes a dynamic puzzle every single round.
But it wasn't an instant success. Siege had a genuinely rocky start in December 2015. Server issues, bugs, not much content.
Critics were harsh. A lot of people claimed the game would be dead in 6 months.
But Ubisoft didn't abandon it. They committed to a strategy that's now the industry standard. Games as a service.
And their genius move, the thing that made it all work, was the operator system.
Right, because each character isn't just a skin. They're a specific tool.
A tool designed to interact with that core mechanic of destruction. That's why it succeeded. Thermite melting reinforced walls, mute jamming signals, pulse-seeing heartbeats. It transformed the shooter from twitch reflexes into this slow-burn game of chess.
A game of chess with thousands of combinations for victory.
Exactly.
And the results, I mean, they speak for themselves. Siege today has over 85 million registered players. It's a top-tier esport. The 6 Invitational fill stadiums. It proved that complex games can be mainstream.
And its influence has moved beyond the screen. You have meme legends like Lord Tachanka. And it's telling that when Ubisoft tried to go sci-fi with Extraction, the reception was, you know, lukewarm. It proved fans want that grounded human realism.
Looking ahead, they have plans for a mobile version. And there were always those rumors of a return to a single-player story. But for now, Ubisoft says they're aiming for 100 operators and will support Siege for a full decade.
Which brings up a big question. What is the unique legacy of Rainbow Six compared to, say, Call of Duty or Battlefield?
Call of Duty is cinematic set pieces. Battlefield is massive chaos.
Right, and Rainbow Six is different from both. It's not about being the lone wolf, it's about one thing, trust.
That is the core lesson for you, the player. You absolutely cannot be a lone wolf hero in Siege. Victory requires your teammate to cover your six, to use their ability correctly. If you fail to watch a camera, your whole team pays the price.
That feeling of shared high-stakes responsibility is just so rare in other shooters.
It is. Tom Clancy passed away in 2013, so he never saw the success of Siege. But you have to think he would recognize that his original dream is still perfectly intact. Wars are won with brains, not muscle.
He absolutely would.
So that's a powerful thought to leave you with. Think about the most painful but maybe most important decision in this whole story-scrapping Patriots and the single-player campaign. Does the success of Siege prove that true tactical depth can only be achieved when developers are brave enough to narrow their focus onto one single, complex mechanic like destruction? Something for you to mull over until our next deep dive.